Justin Goodrum welcomes back Wes Goldberg of the Locked On Heat podcast to discuss how the Heat have been hammered with injuries all this season. Will Pat Riley pursue a reconstruction of the roster? Is Tyler Hero better off with another team? And if gambling will harm the future of the NBA, this was a great, great chat with Wes as we broke down a lot of impending issues with the Heat and also had a very, really constructive conversation about just gambling. I'm not against gambling. I think gambling is really could be great for sports, but also think there should be a lot of regulation. And Wes and I really had a deep discussion about that. Hoopsology is presented by Ball's Life, and now Wes Goldberg. He covers the Miami Heat and the NBA, and he's also a managing editor for Fansided's All You Can Heat. And you can catch him as the host of the Locked On Heat podcast. We welcome back Wes Goldberg onto Hoopsology. Welcome back, Wes.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back onto the show. I think you're one of the most leading authorities on the Miami Heat, and it's a pleasure to have you back on. So let's hop into it. And I think I've told you this before the last time you were on. I think myself and my co-host, Matt, I think we are totally guilty of always underestimating the Heat. And we get to playoff time, and they surprise not only myself and my co-host, but also the rest of the NBA as well. The Heat are currently seventh in the Eastern Conference. There's been a lot of movement between, I think, the third and eighth seed within the Eastern Conference. What has been your impression of the Heat in this regular season? The Heat have been known to kind of have a slow start during regular season and then turn it on during the playoffs. Is that the case this season, or are you seeing any other observations that make this season unique compared to the others?
Yeah, it's such a great question because I honestly don't know what to think about this team. I have no clue. I don't even really know what it looks like when it's healthy or if it will ever be healthy. They have the fourth most games missed due to injury this year. They've had to play 35 different starting lineups because of injuries this season. So to ask what this Miami Heat team is to assume that you know anything about A, what the starting lineup even is when they're fully healthy. Is Duncan Robinson in the starting lineup? Is it Tyler Hero? Is Nikola Jovic really the starting power forward going into a playoff series? Like, these are questions that are very much open and unanswered right now. And then what do those starting lineups look like? How do these guys mesh together? So there's been little stretches, and when I say little, I cannot emphasize enough how small they are, where this team has been healthy. There's some lineup combination data that you can look like that you can look at that says, okay, well, when Jimmy and Bam are on the court together, the Heat are outscoring their opponents by 5 points every 100 possessions. That's good. It's not like Celtics good. It's not Dame and Giannis and Milwaukee good, but it's good. So I think that this year is unique in that the injuries have just piled up in a way where it makes it really hard to evaluate this team, whereas last year, where they were in the play-in tournament and made it from the eighth seed to the finals, it was sort of a different, the context was different. Like in the regular season, this team was, that last year's team was like bottom five in 3-point percentage. And then all of a sudden that snapped back the other way. Everybody basically on the roster went from career lows in 3-point percentage to career highs in 3-point percentage in the playoffs. And then next thing you know, they're in the NBA finals. This team's actually a good three-point shooting team. They're like top 10, 11 in three-point shooting percentage. So that kind of positive regression to the mean, like lightning in a bottle type thing in the postseason, isn't really going to happen, right? There's not going to be some dramatic swing from the regular season to the playoffs in a positive way, of course, for the Heat this year. So if there's any sort of swing factor that you could compare from last year to this year, maybe it's just that all of a sudden, just as the playoffs are getting started, everybody gets healthy for the first time, and then every opponent, whether it's Milwaukee, Boston, whoever they see in the first round, Cleveland, they're like, oh my God, it's the Miami Heat at full strength, something we have not seen in a year and a half, basically, because even Tyler Hero wasn't part of the finals run last year. What do we do with this? And if you get that and a Jimmy Butler playing at all NBA level, then yeah, I think that team can compete with anybody in the East, but we're just talking about theoreticals right now because we haven't really seen it in a really long time.
How does the team feel, you think, in terms of having a lot of injuries and trying to have any sort of cohesiveness? Are they optimistic in terms of, hey, we've been hurt the entire season once, everybody's healthy, we're going to get it together, we know what we're capable of, and we're not afraid of any other teams in the playoffs? Or are they generally concerned about not having that continuity just due to everybody, you know, consistently getting hurt throughout the season?
Yeah, it's another good question. What they say and how they act might be a little bit different, and I might just be projecting my own feelings onto the team. I'll get to that in a minute. But like what they say is, we have enough. They always say that. We have enough. Do they, though? Because they've been hurt all year, and they're barely, you know, they're a play-in team. Is that enough? It's enough to be a play-in team. Is that enough to get back to the finals? I don't think that it is, especially when you're going up against the best teams in the East in a playoff series. This team is also 3-18 against teams of the top 10 point differential all year. So, yeah, it's enough to beat bad teams. It's not enough to beat good teams. And the thing about the playoffs is you play the good teams, not the bad teams in the playoffs. And so if you're the Heat, that's got to be a concern. And so, yeah, they say all the time that they feel optimistic and that they're encouraging, even out of practice today. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. Like, you know, Kevin Love could play Friday night. Tyler Hero was ramping up. So we'll see what happens with those guys. Those guys are so vitally important to what this team does. But then, I don't know, it does sort of, again, maybe this is just me projecting, but I'm around the team every day. It's frustrating. It has to be frustrating that they just haven't had their guys. It's like Jimmy Butler's out, and then Bam's out, and then Tyler Hero's missed 30 games this year. It has to be frustrating on this team, especially for the guys like Bam who are so available all the time and end up having to carry so much more of a load. And that's before the playoffs even start, before the real grind even begins. And so I do think that it's frustrating, and I think that that's fair. I think it would be weird if they weren't frustrated.
So is all this frustration leading to what you discussed on a recent episode of your podcast, which was Pat Riley possibly working on a rebuild? Is that kind of leading to his thinking on that in terms of particularly this season and all the injuries, or this has been in the works for a few years now in terms of his thinking?
I think that I don't know that Pat Riley can watch this team if they end up, I mean, even if they end up with the sixth seed, like we're talking about a play-in team or a fringe playoff team in two straight regular seasons. I don't think that any executive would look at this team and say, yeah, let's run this baby back, even especially with the payroll that this team has. I mean, Miami's going to have one of the top five payrolls in the league next year. They've got five guys making more than $20 million, two guys at max contracts between Jimmy and Bam. They're right up against that second luxury tax apron. Like, they cannot afford this to fill out the rest of this roster without going into that second tax apron, more likely than not. And so does that mean rebuild? I don't know. But it does mean changes, and it probably means some payroll shedding. And what does that look like? Like, which one of these big contracts are you going to try to salary dump somewhere? I think all those questions, like, if this team can't make a move that gets them to the Boston-Milwaukee level in the Eastern Conference, which I think that would be the first thing that Pat Riley would try to do. Let's go get one more star. Can we make that happen? Can we go up two or three notches in our own conference? And if the Damian Lillard trade is a great example of what they were trying to do and obviously didn't accomplish, if they could make that trade this summer, then I don't know that it's a rebuild. It's more sort of like a major addition. But if they can't accomplish that, then I do think that they have to ask themselves some serious questions. And I would be shocked if these questions were not crossing Pat Riley's mind right now. You have a plan A and you have a plan B. Plan A, go get another star. Try to make another run at this thing. Plan B is probably like, we cannot justify the payroll of this team and the results that we've gotten the last couple of years in the regular season. In the regular season. And that's the important part. Yes, the Heat made that run to the finals last year as the eighth seed. You want it to be easier, and I think that's fair. You want to be a better regular season team. You don't want all this wear and tear during the regular season on your star players, Bam and Jimmy Butler. You want to find them some help, and Jimmy's getting older. He's going to be 35 next year. Like, this, that's a real, and he's going to be up for an extension. That's another thing that you have to consider if you're this front office. So I think everything's going to be on the table, but I do think that this is going to be a really interesting summer for Miami.
So who would be that superstar that, if you're running the Heat, Who are you going after? Since you mentioned last summer, this seems the saga of Damian Lillard. He's gone. So if you had your preference, who would be the number one guy on your list?
Can I say Damian Lillard again? Like, what happens in Milwaukee this year?
You know,
yeah. Like, who knows what happens with that group? Doc Rivers hasn't been known for keeping superstars happy long term.
Good point.
You know, with in his past stops. So Damian Lillard could definitely be on the top of that list. I think Donovan Mitchell, whatever happens with Cleveland in these playoffs, if they flame out again in one round, then they have to really consider making some changes too. So those would be the two guys that I would look at if I were the Heat.
So going back to this season, with the Heat entering the playoffs, what would be the ideal first round matchup, you think, considering like all their injuries, if they're able to make, get everybody healthy, who would be that first ideal opponent that would match up with the Heat fairly well to test them, but not be a threat to eliminate them?
Cleveland. Yeah. I mean, in order, it would be Cleveland. And then you try to get that sixth seed, which is still a possibility for Miami. However slim it might be, I think they're it's probably like a 50-50 chance between them and the Pacers with that sixth seed spot. So if you can get the sixth seed, then you get a week break, so you don't have to deal with the play-in tournament. You get a little bit fresher, you get a little bit healthier, get some rest. And then in a seven-game series against the Cavs, I would pick the Heat at this point, depending on who was available, obviously, for both teams. Both teams have been dealing with so many injuries this year. And then after that, it would be, you know, if the Heat were healthy as the seventh seed against the Milwaukee Bucks, I would be very interested to see how that played out. I think Milwaukee is far more talented, and I think Miami is way better coached. And I think that would be a really interesting matchup. And then you want to avoid Boston at all costs. I know that Heat fans think that the Heat or live rent-free in Boston's head. I think they do in Boston fans' heads. I think no, there's not a Boston fan on the planet that wants to see the Miami Heat. And I'm sure the Celtics would rather see another team that's not the Heat. But the Celtics are just so good this year that I don't think anybody in their right mind would pick the Heat over the Celtics.
So it's interesting with the Heat because you mentioned that they're very well coached, and there's a lot of, I don't know, it must be disrespect for me saying this, kind of a little bit of newer kids on the block in terms of the top of the Eastern Conference. You know, the Knicks are more relevant than they have been. You mentioned the Cavaliers, the Sixers have taken a step back. If the Heat do happen to get it together and also get a superstar this summer, do you see them being a top-tier team at the top of the Eastern Conference with Boston? Because I would say besides Milwaukee and Boston, correct me if I'm wrong, and the 76ers somewhat, but Embiid's, you know, he's always hurt. Like, it seems like it's very turbulent within kind of that mid to lower end of the conference. And I see the Heat always are pretty consistent just due to just how the organization is ran. And to your point about frustration, I just feel that it has to be just so annoying because you know the Heat have been battle tested. And besides, you mentioned the Celtics, they could pretty much beat anybody else within the Eastern Conference. Do you see them being kind of, if everything comes together, you know, leading the Eastern Conference? Is that a strong possibility for years to come if they can make the right roster moves in the future?
Yeah, if this team gets a legit superstar to pair with Jimmy Butler, or to maybe take the baton from Jimmy Butler, who has not been that player in the regular season. He can be playoff Jimmy in the postseason, but he has not been that guy in the regular season for a couple of years now. And so I would love to see what Eric Spoelstra at this stage of his career would do with a super duper star. Like, could you imagine? Like, we saw Eric Spoelstra with LeBron and D Wade, but that was a very, very young Spoelstra, not the best coach in the league. Eric Spoelstra, he is unanimously considered the best coach in the NBA at this point. He has made so much out of nothing these last couple years with the Heat that he must be champing at the bit to get his hands on one of these guys. One of like Kevin Durant a couple years ago, the Heat were involved in him. Like, could you imagine Eric Spoelstra coaching Luka Doncic? Like, that's not even like a rumor thing. I'm just like, just a hypothetical. Yeah. Just like put him in. And I think it's part of the reason why he's involved with Team USA. It's just like, let me coach a superstar. Like, let me see what, like, let me get my hands on the top talent and work with these guys because he's so motivated by that stuff and winning at the highest level. And somebody asked him the other day before the Heat hosted the Nuggets in Miami. They were like, what advice would you give Michael Malone in defending a title? And Eric Spoelstra said, I understand that I've done that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I understand that I've done that in my career, but it's been a decade. I'm probably not even the right person to ask because I don't even know how I would do it anymore. I don't even remember those championships. This dude is so starved for a championship, and yeah, they've been in the finals twice over the last 4 years, but he wants the ring, man. That dude wants the hardware, and if you gave him a star like that, I can only imagine what he would do. So to answer your question, like, Boston's awesome, and it feels like they're going to be awesome for a really long time. Milwaukee, if they can get Giannis under contract long-term, and if that's a long-term thing, then yeah, they're going to be great for a very long time. Philadelphia with Joel Embiid, that's a top five player in the NBA when he's healthy. But if you gave Spo one of those guys, not necessarily those specific names, but just like a top seven guy in the NBA, I'm not, I would be very scared if I were another team in the NBA, Eastern Conference, Western Conference.
Yeah, the possibilities seem pretty endless if that does happen. I want to shift to Tyler Hero. Mm-hmm. And you also discussed him on a recent episode and his tweet that he put out just saying that he had had a great workout, but I ain't coming back no time soon. Can you kind of lay out just for our listeners that may not follow the Heat specifically, what is the status of this relationship? And from an kind of outsider looking in, it seems like things have kind of gone in a left direction, so to speak. Can you kind of describe when things went wrong? Is there any hope of salvaging this relationship with Tyler Hero and the Heat? Because to me, especially during the bubble and certain points, I thought this guy's going to be a key part of the Heat franchise. Just, I don't know, everything kind of synced up when you saw it on the surface, but now things have kind of gone in the opposite direction. What's gone wrong with Tyler Hero and the Heat?
Well, the availability is a problem. He's played 36 games, something like that, all year long. You know, obviously missed last year with the broken hand in the playoff run. So just the injury concerns have been mounting, and you know, I think there is a level of frustration with that. Now, this most recent stretch, he's missed 16 straight games. The first couple were because of a hyperextended knee that he suffered in New Orleans at the end of February, but the most of this stretch has been this right foot issue, and it's medial tendonitis or something like that. Basically, it's a pain management thing with the foot. And I do wonder if there's some frustration, because now we're not talking about a structural issue, right? We're just talking about tendonitis. We're talking about inflammation. We're talking about pain management and all these things. And we got 10 games left, and this team is just trying its best to get out of the play-in tournament. And it's not just Tyler. It's Duncan Robinson that's been injured. It's Jimmy Butler in and out. They're starting Patty Mills, for God's sake, at shooting guard right now. Like, this team needs wins, and they need Tyler Hero in a bad way. Now, I don't know that they are blaming Tyler Hero for not being out there. I think that's different than just being frustrated overall with his lack of availability and then like angry with Tyler for not being out there and putting his body through something that he does not feel comfortable doing. I think those two things are very different, but it's a weird thing to balance. And in terms of the relationship, I mean, Tyler Hero, I talked to him about a piece I wrote for The Ringer earlier this year and just about just constantly being mentioned in trade rumors, and he's been very open about that, about, hey, yeah, I'm in the trade rumors. And I remember asking him, I'm like, hey, do you take any solace in the fact that, like, you're not in a trade rumor for just anybody? It's top 75 players of all time, future Hall of Famers like Kevin Durant and Damian Lillard. And he just sort of laughed, and he was like, I guess you could look at it that way. He doesn't look at it that way. He don't want to be traded. He's sick of it. He's like, I put all the work in, and I want to have a chance. So, you know, it's only natural to be frustrated with the trade rumors. And I this is not a situation, and I appreciate this from him too, where it's like, oh, the media is just coming up with these trade rumors. He's like, no, I was offered for Kevin Durant and Damian Lillard. I'm very aware of that. The Heat told him he was offered for those players. So he's like, okay, I know where I stand with this organization. I'm good, but not good enough, right? And so, you know, that could be hard to grapple with. And he's working. I don't think that takes away from the work. If anything, I felt like it fueled him at the beginning of the season. He was putting up career highs and points, assists, shooting percentages. Like, he was having his best season of his career before the injuries all came about. But, you know, in terms of where the relationship is between him, it's and the organization, it's very like, it's business, man. It's just like, hey, I'm employed here. I want to win. I want to play my best. He's going to do what it takes to win. I think he's been pretty unselfish this year when he's been on the court. But it's business. It's not warm. It's not like, I can't wait to get my statue outside Miami one day. Like, it's not that. It's business. And sometimes that's enough. But I also know this. I haven't really seen a player involved in trade rumors this long not get traded. You know, I think about like OG Anunoby, John Collins, like these guys. Just like for years, just involved in trade rumors. Like, eventually it feels like the trade ultimately happens. And I do wonder if we're kind of getting to that point with Tyler.
So from what you said, are you concerned that this might take a toll on him? And he is a human being, and I understand it does fuel him on the court, but at the same time, it's got to be just annoying just to hear that consistently, especially on the court. Like you were saying before, the injuries, he was performing at a career level. So I'm sure that has to take a toll on him. Do you see him, if he does get traded or when he does, him flourishing somewhere else? Do you think his ceiling's higher on another team if everything goes right and he remains injury free?
He wants to explore the game. Like, he wants to grow, right? And that's the tough part with Miami because of the personnel. Like, what Tyler Herro wants to do is he wants to dribble the ball. He wants to get into that mid-range. He's a hooper, right? Like, that's, you know, you got Hooper and basketball players. He's Hooper. I want to do the fun stuff. I want it to look pretty. I want all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's very effective at that. But when you're doing it also with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, who want to kind of exist in the same areas on the court, it's really conflicting. And so Tyler Herro is sort of forced to be more of a three-point shooter. I would argue, and I think a lot of smart basketball analysts would argue, that he's better at that. Take more threes, less long twos. But Tyler Herro does want to explore his game a little bit more, and it's tough for somebody who's 24 years old playing for a team with championship aspirations not to be able to be afforded at least a couple of years in his youth to explore that and maybe just work it out of his game, iron that out, and then figure out where his most effective places on the court are. And the reason I bring that up is to answer your question, it depends on where he got traded, right? If Tyler Herro got traded to another championship contender, I don't know that those opportunities will be afforded to him. And I think it could very much look the same way it does in Miami, where it's him trying to grow, conflicting maybe with the larger goal of the organization. And again, I don't even mean that as a criticism of Tyler Herro. That dude deserves to try to make the most of his career. But if he were traded to a rebuilding team that was young and had, you know, a timeline of we're not competing these next couple of years, but we're looking 4, 5, 6 years down the road, do whatever you want. Here's the ball. Grow and grow as fast as you can. I think he would maybe flourish in that. And I think he actually would, depending on where it was, obviously, maybe even enjoy that experience a little bit of maybe getting a chance to be his own guy, because he does believe, and he told me this, he could be one of the best scorers in the NBA. He has that belief in himself. Whether or not that's true or not, who knows? But he wants a chance. And it's not to say that Miami hasn't given him a chance. They're giving him a chance within certain parameters that are not necessarily Heat-centric, but the parameters that just come with being on a championship-contending team with other stars who also need the ball in the places that they need it. So, yeah, I think all of that stuff has affected him. I think ultimately what it comes, I think he would still prefer to have an impact on a winning team. The hard thing is that the last couple of years, because of his availability, he hasn't been able to feel that impact on a winning team. And I can't imagine that the Heat going to the finals last year without him felt very good. He wanted desperately to play that one finals game, and they just weren't going to let him put himself in harm's way in a series that, quite frankly, was already over against Denver. So, you know, I think all of that has taken a toll on him.
One last question for you. Recently, there's been a gambling controversy with Jonte Porter. I've heard comments from Tyrese Haliburton and today, I believe, from Jason Tatum, just about just the effects of how fans are viewing the players and how they're affected by just all the new implementations of gambling on the NBA. For you covering the Heat, have you noticed just the players feel differently in terms of not only how the league is covered, but how fans view them in terms of like different taunts or, you know, instead of just saying, hey, you know, Jimmy Butler, you suck because I'm a Boston Celtics fan. Now it's like you cost me money. Is there any kind of a difference there in terms of psychologically gambling has had an effect on just the NBA's from a player perspective? And do you think with this whole Jonte Porter situation, are you concerned about that? Anything to be worried? Like, what do you think? Because I know a lot of people, when the integrity of the sport seems to be compromised, it's panic mode immediately. So are you kind of leaning into that, or are you kind of waiting things to play out in terms of the situation?
Yeah, in terms of how the Heat have responded, if it's affected them at all, they would never tell you. That's just the way that they are. They're sickos like that. But it has definitely taken a toll on, I think, the NBA's players. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. And the coaches, too. They hear the same stuff that the players do a lot. But it's a combination of gambling and social media, right? Gambling has been around forever. I mean, this isn't new. It's whether it was legal or illegal, but people were still complaining about players not hitting the over, right, or covering the spread or whatever it was before Twitter existed. But now we have such access to these players. Like, you hear Jason Tatum and Tyrese Halliburton talk about getting messages from fans about, hey man, like, you, I need you to get 23 and a half points for me tonight. Like, that didn't happen, you know, in the 90s before the internet like this. Like, that just didn't happen. So you have this combination of gambling that's more prevalent than ever because it's being legalized in so many places, plus social media and direct access to these athletes. Of course they're going to feel this way. And of course it's going to be on their mind at times, or at least a distraction at times. And it's going to be really hard to get away from that stuff. I'm really worried about what we're doing in terms of the sports gambling stuff. I like sports gambling. I don't really, like, I do it occasionally, like on the Super Bowl and stuff like that. But like, I don't know that the NBA needs to be offering, like, hey, bet this parlay on the NBA app while you're watching the game. That, to me, like, this feels like cigarettes before we realized it turned, it led to cancer. Like, it's, it just, it feels a little problematic. And for the NBA, by the way, to do this, not that long after referees were with the scandal with betting. I mean, that was not that long ago. It feels like forever ago, but it, like, in the grand scheme of things, it was not that long ago. For them to go from that to now encouraging people to gamble on the game, to the point where now you've got a guy on a two-way contract and Jonte Porter is saying, hey man, I'm just going to hit my unders because I know I'm not getting on the court tonight. And I know that I'm not, under 0.5 three-pointers, I'm just not going to take a three for a team that is actively tanking with the Raptors. Nobody's going to care if I don't take the open three because we're trying to lose games. And I'm on a two-way contract, not making any money compared to these other guys in the locker room. Why don't I take 30 grand and put it on my under? And whatever that hit, we're talking about maybe doubling the guy's salary with a couple of good bets in a week. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And so, yeah, that option is out there. Mm-hmm. And if you're a player on the fringe of the NBA, I don't know. Like, I'm not like condoning what Jonte Porter did, but also, like, if you don't have a long future in the league, why not? You know what I mean? Like, it's a risk reward. Like, hey, you're going to kick me out of the league? I was already almost out of the league. And I know Jonte Porter was playing pretty well and stuff, but nothing was guaranteed with that guy. So, I think that the league has to really look at this and hear what the players are saying and find guardrails. But also, it's going to be on the players to make their own adjustments and say, you know what, maybe I'm just not going to be on Twitter on game day. Maybe that's just something that I'm going to have to avoid if something like this is always affecting me.
So what do you think are the doomsday scenario, the consequences if the NBA just lets gambling ride like this with really no kind of regulations? They just go full tilt. I mean, it's inevitable that, you know, NBA franchise ends up in Vegas after the television deal is completed. So if this does continue with all these kind of different gambling controversies with lower level players, even though it's not like your mainstream superstars, where do you kind of see this going in terms of a doomsday scenario that kind of scares you, you think?
Well, if you've got league employees or referees, again, dealing with this, right? Like, you've gotten a huge turnover in the referees right now. I'm not accusing them of getting involved in this, but you have a large, the referee staff has basically been completely turned over since that first scandal. And it is trending younger because that's the way it works. And younger referees might have a different view on gambling. Younger referees might not remember, you know, what happened in the 90s. So I think that would be a doomsday scenario, is if another official was discovered to be gambling on games. I mean, that would be an absolute disaster, bigger than it was the first time. So you have that. And then you mentioned, like, a doomsday scenario. Like, what if a star player is gambling on himself? Like, what do you do? And it's discovered, like, in a playoff. Like, what happens, right? If it's like a hot young 23-year-old who's on the rise, it's discovered that him or somebody in his camp is gambling. Like, maybe something similar to the Ohshay Ohtani thing, where now it's a distraction. Like, there's that. I think that, but I think maybe the biggest doomsday scenario, you can look at what the NFL is dealing with concussions and being taken to federal court because you've got a players' union suing them and former players suing them for not doing their due diligence on the impact of concussions long term. Well, what if the Players Association, which has had a long-standing positive relationship with the NBA, very different than the NFL, the Players Association and the owners in the NBA tend to get along very well. Well, what if a couple years from now we realize, hey, the mental stress that you've put on guys like Tatum, like what Tatum and Halliburton and these guys are talking about, like 15 years from now, what if we see the adverse effects of whatever it is, and now all of a sudden we're in federal court, and the NBA is part of a class action lawsuit being blamed for the propagation of sports gambling and an epidemic of sports gambling across the country. Like, that's the ultimate doomsday scenario. I don't know. It's a fascinating thing to watch here, but I think that we got to be really careful. And I don't think that they're necessarily being careful enough, because it just feels like the reason why they do all these things is because of money. And there's no other reason for it. It doesn't make the product better. I don't want ads. I don't want NBA like bet ads on my league pass. Like, that's annoying. Yeah. Like, another thing popping up on my screen. Like, get that out of here. If I want to bet, I'll bet. I can figure that out on my phone. I don't need your help. Like, I don't know that it makes the product substantially better. And so if the only reason you're doing it is for money, it doesn't feel like a good enough reason to do it, considering some of the downsides.
No, I agree. And I think with Adam Silver, I commend him for looking at the league very differently in a very futuristic way. But one of the things that concerns me, especially with gambling, is kind of his lack of discussing regulation and making sure there are safeguards in place. It seems like he's very bullish, and I don't think he's aware. I don't know if he's not telling the public that in terms of like the long-term consequences, or he's just ignoring it and just doesn't care. So I think that is a genuine concern in terms of kind of the future of this whole Jontay Porter situation.
Yeah, I mean, look, his job is ultimately to facilitate money making for the league, right? Yeah. But there is a responsibility that comes with that job. And I think every time he's been asked about, you know, the regulations around sports gambling, he says, well, we're not a government body. You know, that's for the federal government and state governments to handle. And he's not wrong. Like, that's factually accurate. But it doesn't mean that you have no responsibility in being a tastemaker, in a way, in that industry either. If you're going to go so far as to make it more popular with your large platform, you can at least take a step in doing something. And by the way, when this thing rolls out, there's going to be like, if you have a problem, call this hotline. Like, that's going to be there. And it's like, all right, cool. Like, who's going to tell you got the problem? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's like having the cancer sticker on the cigarette pack, right? It's not going to, that doesn't stop anybody from buying a pack of cigarettes. They know what they're doing. You know what I mean? So, you know, not to sound like old guy on my lawn. Like, again, I have no problem with gambling in terms of just if it's your money, do what you want. Like, I'm not telling you what to do, but I do think that we get in trouble when big business starts kind of fetishizing what it is. And it doesn't really feel like it's an accurate portrayal. I don't know how many times I got to see Jamie Foxx on my TV telling me that gambling is the way to be as cool as Jamie Foxx or whatever that is that the message is. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, no, completely agree. Wes, this has been a fantastic chat. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. Please let our audience know where they can find you on social media and any of the other products you're working on as well.
Yeah, Locked On Heat is the podcast if you're interested in daily content on the Miami Heat. Also, Locked On NBA, that's a Monday to Friday show on the Locked On Podcast Network. I host the Thursday night show for Friday morning, so check that out. And then if you want to read about the Miami Heat, allyoucanheat.com. And then my Twitter account, WC Goldberg. I do some freelance work for The Ringer and other places, and anything I do will be posted over there. But thanks for having me, Justin.
Yeah, thanks for coming back to the show. Really appreciate it, Wes. Thanks.
You got it.
Thank you for listening to Hoopsology, presented by Boss Life. If you have comments or questions about this episode, please email hoopsologypod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on all social media platforms.